Marshall, you can call the court to session.
Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Cochran, Judge Connolly, Judge Smith, the Honorable Gene M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. I apologize for the technology challenges we faced this morning. Not sure exactly what was going on, but apparently there were some issues with the Zoom platform. It's a great technology when it works, but occasionally there are challenges. So thank you for your patience. The first case on our calendar today is A21-0931, Kathy Spann et al. Versus Minneapolis City Council et al. As you know, this oral argument is being conducted by Zoom. The same procedural rules apply to our Zoom oral arguments as apply to our in-person oral arguments. Each party will have 15 minutes for their initial argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. If you have the Zoom screen on grid view, you should be able to see the clock, which the marshal is keeping for us. If there are any other technology issues going forward, the marshal will stop the clock and we will adjust accordingly. But hopefully we will have smooth sailing from here on out. Just a reminder that we are recording this oral argument and no other recordings of the oral argument are permitted except with the express prior permission of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. With that, we can get started. To counsel, please identify yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument. Counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Gregory Sauter. I am an assistant city attorney for the city of Minneapolis, and I represent the mayor and city council in this matter. And appellants are here because the charter is clear that the council appropriates funds for the police department and the mayor runs the police department. The council has continuously met its obligations. In 2020, it funded 888 peace officers in the Minneapolis Police Department. In 2021, as stipulated by the parties, it funded 770 peace officers. And in not part of the record, but in the budget that was passed last week and we're awaiting mayoral signature on, it funded 756 peace officers. There is no presently employed requirement in existence in the charter as it's written today. There's no distinction between—
Counsel, just to clarify then, is it your position that all that the charter requires is funding of a minimum number of positions? There's no obligation to hire a minimum, that same number of police officers?
Your Honor, is the city's position that the city council's obligation to fund ends when it passes the budget. At that point, the duties pass over to the mayor, who has complete power over the police department, and using his good faith, he is hiring at as fast a rate as is reasonably possible. There is no requirement that we reach a certain employee number by a certain date, and there is no evidence that the mayor is doing anything other than acting in good faith in order to return the police department to the numbers that are funded.
So I'd like to follow up on Judge Cochran's excellent question. So I just heard you say that there's no requirement to employ by a certain date. So between 2020 and 2030, are you saying that as long as you funded the magic number, that magic number never has to be deployed in the city of Minneapolis as police officers?
Your Honor, when one looks at how the authority is divided within the charter.
You know, that's not my question. You know, I read that, yes, the mayor has complete power of the established maintenance and command. I agree, as long as there is the magic number of officers, he can do whatever he wants with them. He can close the fifth precinct. He can send half of them to do murders. The other half to do carjackings, as long as that's minimum numbers there. So my question is, you said it never has to be by a certain date. So are you saying by the year 2030, as long as they've funded the magic number, they never have to employ the magic number throughout that entire 10-year period?
Your Honor,
I'd like a yes or no answer to that question.
Your Honor, the city is not saying that. But the city is saying that the mayor
then,
has an obligation.
If you're not saying that, how can you say all your requirement is to fund them? I mean, I understand the argument. I'm not sure I agree with it. But if you're saying you never have to meet it by a certain date, then that certain date never has to occur, which is seems to me to defy basic common sense, Mr. Sauter.
Well, Your Honor, when one looks at the charter as it exists today versus the charter as it existed beforehand, there's a substantial difference in how the charter is written. And when one looks at the charter that was written, it did require that the mayor maintain and keep it as close to that number as possible. But when the charter was rewritten in 2015 and adopted by the voters, it had a different distinction and a different balance of powers. And in that balance of powers, you know, it gave...
Was the plain language amendment supposed to change the charter?
Your Honor, it was supposed to bring it forward, but it also has its own canons of construction. And those canons of construction do not allow for a look back to the old charter.
I'm not looking back. I'm not looking back. So again, I haven't heard that answer yet. So are you saying, or maybe I have. So you're saying... At some point within that 10-year period, you have to employ, you know, the magic number of police officers. Yes or no?
Your Honor, the city's obligation or the mayor's obligation is to act in good faith in order to spend the monies appropriated in front of him. And there is no evidence that the mayor is not spending those monies appropriated in front of him in good faith in order to return the police department to a higher number of officers.
But I thought you just said you don't have to, as long as you fund them.
Your Honor, the distinction the city is making here is between what is required and what is set to the discretion. And how quickly one hires, how quickly one trains, is firmly within the discretion of the mayor in the charter as written. And in that point, we expect the mayor to act in good faith to follow the laws of the land, and he's doing
it. You know, at one point you said, so you've always provided for the funding of the required number of police officers. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
At one point I read in the briefs that you rescinded, I don't know what the magic number was, 27 offers of employment. If there was funding for those 27 officers, why were their employment officers, why were those officers' offers rescinded?
Your Honor, that's not part of the record here, and it's not part of the record for you to review. There is no testimony as to why that was rescinded, and I can't
No,
really
I didn't say why it was
why
rescinded. I said, did that occur?
Yes, it did. It did occur, Your Honor.
I don't understand. If you have the funding for them, why did you... It just seems to me that it would be automatic that if you have offers, those people would be in joining the force.
Your Honor, what you're asking for is speculation for things that are outside the record. It is true that the mayor canceled the class in August of 2020, but beyond that, there's nothing in what is in the record is the fact the city was facing an enormous shortfall and dealing
well,
with
doesn't the funding provision say you can raise taxes to deal with that, to hire the requisite number of police officers?
It does. And at that time, there was funding for those positions should they have been filled, Your Honor. Because as stipulated by the parties, there was funding for 888 officers in the year 2020. And had those people made it through the academy, they would have had funding for their salaries there. That was canceled. But if one also looks at the summer of 2020, at that point, the numbers were not nearly so grim as they are now. And they did not approach the, whether one uses the 2020 census number of 730.98 or the 2010 census number of 650.38, the numbers were not even approaching those numbers. Back in July of 2020, in September of 2020, there were 851 sworn officers on the city's books. Since then, we have faced a mass resignation of officers, Your Honor. So at the point that that decision was made to cancel the class, the vision on the problem that we are facing was not clear, Your Honor. I'd like to get, with the short time I've got left, I'd like to get to, back to some of the issues that that we have here. And
Council, the first, I'd like to turn back to the charter language, which maybe is where you were going, but there's in section 7.3, there's paragraph A that talks about the police department and the mayor's powers relating to the police department. And then there's paragraph C relating to the city council's funding of a police force. But they're part of the same paragraph, so we should read them together to give meaning to the paragraph as a whole. I assume you'd agree with that.
Yes, Your Honor, basic canons of construction.
And in the paragraph C, it says the city council must fund a police force of at least 0.0017 employees per resident, comma, and provide for those employees compensation. And your argument in your brief focuses on the language must fund a police force, but there's also that language after the funding language that says, and provide for those employees compensation. So can you tell me what you believe the language and provide for those employees compensation means, how it's different than funding a police force?
Well, Your Honor, in 7.3C, in 7.3A and C, it divides the powers between the mayor and the city council. And in 7.3C, the city council is given only one authority over the police department, and that is it has the authority to, and it is required to provide funding at the ratio. And up until we have gotten here, we've never had an issue at the city of Minneapolis of having an actual deployed force below that funding ratio. But what we have had, is the funding is there. And in 2020, when this lawsuit was brought, there were more than the, whether one uses 730 or the 650 number of officers who were employees of the police department, and their salaries were paid for. Now we are at a circumstance where we have fewer than the 730 that are required by the 2020 census. But should we be able to recruit and bring in officers who are there, their salaries are paid for, and they are there within the budget. So in that case, using our best efforts, we can bring in as many people as we can possibly bring in order to get that, and the money is there to pay for them. That's how it answers the question, Your Honor.
So does the term employees' compensation implicitly obligate or provide a duty for the city to ensure that minimum number is employed, because it's the term employees, not persons, you know, to be hired. It contemplates existing employees.
Well, Your Honor, what the way it is structured is the mayor has the authority and duty to hire, fire, and bring in new officers. And the mayor is doing that diligently and quickly, and as quickly as is reasonably possible, especially in the current circumstances. And the mayor, if he gets those people in, their compensation is paid for. And that's what it means, Your Honor. Your Honor, I am running out of time here, but I would like to look at Hayden versus Minneapolis, a case cited by respondents in this matter. And contrary to the district court and respondents' opinion, the prior charter does not govern what we have here in the new charter. Hayden versus Minneapolis does not stand for the provision that the prior charter and its legislative history must be consulted in interpreting the current charter. Rather, it stands for the opposite. In Hayden, the city of Minneapolis and the park board argued under that under earlier interpretations of the charter, the city legally operated parks. The court rejected this argument, finding that the language in the new charter in question was unambiguous. It also found that under the charter's own canons of construction, there was no settled interpretation to import into the new language. Here, there is no settled interpretation of the old charter to bring forward. There is no evidence about a dispute about MPD staffing levels ever existed until the mass resignations of 2020 and 21. Like the issues faced by the court in Hayden, the charter provisions at issue here are not ambiguous. By the canons of construction, it's not appropriate to import the old wording.
Council, assuming the language is ambiguous, is there any indication in the record as to why the language changed from the old version to the new version? You're arguing, I think it was a substantive change. Is there any suggestion that that language change was intended to make a substantive change from the 61 language to the current language?
Your Honor, I'm aware of no part of the record that indicates either way on that about specifically the drafting of the 2015 charter, no. What the 2015 charter does is it provides a division of authority with the mayor allowed to recruit and train, and that is his discretion.
I know you have, I'll give you a little extra time. This is an important case. But I did want to turn back to your suggestion earlier that the mayor doesn't have an absolute duty to hire that minimum number of employees or to ensure that there's a minimum police force that meets that number at all times. Instead, the mayor has a duty to act in good faith to spend the money. Where do we find that duty in the charter?
Your Honor, I'm using that for, I'm analogizing to the good faith duties that the governor may have to follow the laws of the legislature and conduct the legislature's will in the action of the executive. And in this case, the city of Minneapolis is looking at the good faith duty of the council as a legislature and the mayor to act there. I don't have any case law for you on that one, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. You may have I'm sorry, Judge Conley, I think has a follow-up question.
Can I ask one more question? I don't think anyone here is suggesting that the mayor is not acting in good faith. I'm sure he is trying, we assume everyone acts in good faith, but, you know, at the end of the day, what is the remedy if, you know, I mean, what if there's a new crisis in 3 years, you know, some 9/11 event and 200 police officers, you know, God forbid, are killed in a bombing event? I mean, at some point, it seems to me there has to be the minimum number of officers hired and employed. And, you know, how far does good faith take you? Going back to my original question, I mean, if 10 years from now, if the mayor says, you know, I'm trying, but, you know, we just can't get there, what's the remedy then? As long as he says, I'm doing my best, that's it?
Well, Your Honor, there is a remedy there, and it was done by the voters in the November election. There were two measures on the ballot, and the entire city council and mayor were up for re-election. Seven city council members lost or resigned from their positions in this election, and one of the major issues was police funding and also the structure of how government worked, and the city and the voters of Minneapolis adopted Amendment 1, which gave more power to the mayor and took power away from the city council, which didn't change 7.3 that we're looking at here in any relevant way.
If I'm understanding your political argument, the people have spoken. Well, they've spoken that saying they want 730 officers employed,
Your Honor,
not just funded.
Your Honor, they have spoken that they want more officers, and they elected a mayor and a city council to do that. And with the 2022 budget,
What about the flip side, Mr. Sauter? What if they didn't? And you had a mayor who said, you know what? I'm not going to hire 730 officers, even if they are funded. Would that be possible?
Your Honor, that's not the circumstance we have here.
I didn't say it was, but what I'm trying to suggest is what happens if they're always funded but never employed? I mean, I'm assuming you would agree that that's not an option, that the mayor couldn't do that.
Your Honor, the mayor has an obligation to act in good faith, and that's never been the circumstance we've had here. The mayor has been, as Your Honor has stated, there is no dispute that the mayor has been acting in good faith. And in fact, the mayor has, we have been recruiting and trying to build our force as quickly as possible. And because of that, the 2022 budget, which is not part of the record and hasn't been signed by the mayor yet, substantially increases the hiring and funding of the Minneapolis Police Department in general. I'd like to direct the court's attention quickly to section 1.3D5 of the charter, which is the decennial census requirement. How the court erred here in the decennial census requirement in that it first recognized that the charter clearly requires the use of the last decennial census. And then it departed and it chose to use the 2019 census and also said the city had a duty going forward to change its force numbers as the census ended. That is not what the clear language of the charter requires. That is the court legislating from the bench and putting its own opinion as to what good policy is here. And in statutory interpretation, which we're using here, it is not appropriate for the court to use its own opinions about how things should work when applying clear language from a charter. Your Honor, I'm over time, and I thank you for allowing me some more time, and that concludes my argument for the moment.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. James Dickey from the Upper Midwest Law Center on behalf of the respondents in this case, and may it please the court. I think you all just heard the major problem with the city's argument. They're saying that the mayor has no requirement under the charter and the city council has no requirement to employ a single police officer other than the chief. The city admits today they have fewer sworn officers on the force than the charter required minimum. But Minneapolis is in a continuing crisis caused by the city council and Mayor Frey's failure to fund and employ the Minneapolis police according to the requirement in section 7.3. And just yesterday, the Star Tribune editorial board, which is not in the record, but they did report that there were only 583 sworn officers, which is substantially lower than even the city's projection of 649 officers on payroll as of January 1, 2022 in the stipulation. The city can update the court with official public records as it needs them, but it hasn't done that. In the meantime, our clients have been facing, as they rightly put it, a hail of bullets ripping through their neighborhood and killing the most vulnerable as the city sits by and does nothing to help. The district court's order for the writ in this case was the first step toward restoring peace to the embattled North Side, which continues to see violent crime sadly reminiscent of the bad old Murderapolis days. Minneapolis is now at 94 homicides for 2021, three short of 1995's all-time high. So the court should affirm the district court's issuance of the writ of mandamus.
I don't think anyone disputes that, you know, it's a very serious crime issue and that your clients are, endangered. But a writ of mandamus requires a clear duty. And the city obviously disagrees with the district court's footnote. So in looking at funding, I mean, it says the city council must fund a police force, you know, which we now all agree is 730, and provide for those employees compensation. It doesn't really say employ, does it? I mean, it doesn't say the city must have at all times a police force that has 730 police officers. So how can we affirm a writ of mandamus when it doesn't seem, as Mr. Sauters pointed out, that the city has a clear duty to, you know, employ or have 730 officers deployed at all time?
Your Honor, thank you. The reality here is that, first of all, the city did say in the district court that with the funding that hiring must happen. So they admitted there.
Our review is de novo here of the language of the city charter. So I think it'd be best to focus on the language of the charter itself and answer Judge Conley's excellent question.
Thank you, Your Honor. So yes, there is a requirement to employ. The language employ is not specifically named in section 7.3A or section 7.3C, but Judge Cochran, as you pointed out earlier, there is this provision in section 7.3C that the funding is aimed at having a certain number of employees per resident and to provide for those employees' compensation. And the mayor does have a duty to maintain the police department. And as the Gillis case from the Supreme Court indicates, that where there are funding minimums that a city has, then mandamus might be the appropriate remedy, which it is here. And the Gillis case dealt with a maximum, said that there was no requirement to fund or to employ a certain number of people where there's a maximum. But on the flip side, if there were a minimum, the case would be different. So there is a clear legal duty that where there is a funding minimum in a charter provision like this, that there has to also be employees to go along with that minimum. Otherwise, there would be no point in funding requirement.
Council, excuse me. I understand your point, but counsel for appellants argues that the funding was consistent with the language of the charter because there was funding for the employees who, and at the time the lawsuit was, well, anyway, at the time the funding was implemented, the requisite number of employees were, the minimum number of employees were employed. So how is their funding not consistent with the charter?
Well, Your Honor, as I mentioned before, there are about 150 sworn officers below the minimum right now. And funding has to translate to hiring. Otherwise, there's no point in a funding provision related to employees. And so, to hold otherwise would be to say that the funding numbers, as long as the city comes up with a number on paper, that alone would be enough to satisfy their duties. And that
Following up on Mr. Sauter's point, the mayor can't just magically poof, create 200 police officers. The city's pointed out that, they have their police academies. That's how they do it. And, whether that's good or bad, what is he supposed to do? I mean, are we supposed to hold him in contempt if there aren't, the extra 170 officers by the end of the year? I mean, that seems to me not right. So how can the mayor, if he's doing the best he can to hire these police officers, which I don't think anyone disputes, you're reading this, it's like at all times, why isn't there a, supposition of reasonableness in this amendment, or excuse me, in this provision?
Well, thank you, Your Honor. So first of all, the funding requirement is mandatory. It's not subject to any kind of permissive authority. And again, I think the Gillis case provides that the mayor does have a mandate where there is a funding minimum to employ the officers that go along with that funding minimum. And so if Your Honor, if you all believe that the provision of the charter is ambiguous as to what it means for the mayor to maintain the police department, then I think the record is replete with examples from the public record history and from the prior version of the charter that the intent of the 1961 amendment was clearly to add police officers, because that's literally what it said, to add to the police force. So there is a mandatory aspect to this.
Looking back at the old language, that required that a police department be established and maintained at a ratio as closely thereto as possible to that same number. And so it required that the department have that number of employees, but I don't see that same language in the current version. Instead, it's a funding and providing compensation. There's no clear language providing for maintaining a force of a specific number. So doesn't that change suggest that the intent was simply to provide funding and compensation for a certain number, but it didn't require maintaining the force at that number, exact number at all times? So if it dipped below, you know, from time to time, that wouldn't be an issue?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that that's the intent of the plain language revision. And the title plain language revision from 2013, 2014, 2015 makes it clear that this is about changing the language. And as Mr. Sauter said, bringing it forth into the new era where you don't have as many heretofores and whereases and all those kinds of things. And in fact, if you in our brief on page 45, footnote 13, we talk about this. That the revision was not intended to change the meaning of the charter. It was only an update for modern style and clarity. And there is I believe the language of the amendment itself, which is amendment number 172, November 5th, 2013, makes that clear as well. And so, you know, the typical rules for statutory interpretation still apply. The court can certainly look back to the old language when there's no express intent to change the language. And interpret it according to what the original intent of the language was. So no, I don't think the plain language revision does anything at all to help the city's argument. And in fact, the only thing that happened based on that was that the duties of the city council and mayor were divided out based on the structure of the Minneapolis government. So I don't think that there is any reason to disregard the prior charter language and also the intent of the voters in 1960, 1961, when they adopted the amendment. So I think that based on all this, there is a clear legal duty that the city has to fund, put enough money in the kitty so that there can be this number of officers on the Minneapolis payroll. And that's not what's happened. As Judge Connolly rightly pointed out in the previous argument section, there are situations in which the city has actively not made actual cuts to their sworn officers, but they have neglected to hire to replace the officers that they're losing. And in addition to that,
you know, I want to ask you this question. So let's say for the sake of argument, we agree with your interpretation and we affirm the district court's decision. She set a hearing, for next June. If at that hearing, the mayor comes in and says, you know, I did the best I could. We're at 700 and the number is 730. Could Judge Anderson it's the city council. If the number is 700 and not 730, could Judge Anderson hold either the mayor or the city council in contempt?
Well, Your Honor, we're a little bit ahead of ourselves there. I think that the remedy here that we need is the alternative writ that was issued. And so let me be clear about one thing before I want to answer your question more directly to the extent that I can, given where we're at in this case. But first of all, it's an alternative writ. So the city has to either comply or show cause why it can't comply. The alternative writ procedure does allow the city an opportunity in June to show cause why it is not able to comply with the law. Now, whether or not that is sufficient or not for the judge, I couldn't say. It's too speculative at this point. But if the Judge Anderson were to find that the city was not doing everything that it could to comply, because what, you know, I keep hearing that the mayor is acting in good faith and the city council has a certain number on paper, but there's no evidence whatsoever that the city has tried to increase funding beyond what its current projections that it provided in April would stipulate or anything else, or even come to a new CBA with the Police Federation, which is still running on a 2017 through 2019 CBA. So unless the city is able to show the court that it actually is acting in good faith, then the court will have to deal with what the city's actions have been so far. And what the court does at that point, we really haven't explored yet. I presume that violation of a court order typically has attendant with it constructive contempt possibilities, but we're not there yet. And I don't think it would be proper for me to speculate as to what the court might do without the benefit of full briefing on that issue. I do think it's an important question. Yes, Your Honor.
I wanted to ask, now that the census is out, do you agree that the issue of when you should use the census data is moot, or do you still agree with the district court that it should be done on an annual basis.
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe that the issue is moot in this case because the judge decided that the census would prevail if it were the higher number, which whether the court agrees to that reasoning or not, the census is the higher number than what the court originally had ordered. It requires 731 sworn officers based on the 0.017 ratio. So it is a moot issue. I would add that this court just last week made a decision dismissing an appeal based on the governor's mask mandate, which said that the issue was moot because the governor had not reimposed the mask mandate yet or declared a new emergency order. While I disagree with that, with the court's decision in that case, this case is far more hypothetical. If the annual rebalancing issue were to come up again, it would only be in the circumstance the district court made its decision, which is once a decade, if there's a global pandemic, which delays the federal census, and there's no census that's applicable to a 2030 budgeting decision. And having said all that, I think the court's order makes practical sense, which is that, you know, even if the census itself has to control, if the city stays at 2020 numbers in 2030, it's going to end up in another problem because it's going to be in violation once again of what the charter says. So the city does have to be proactive from a practical standpoint. But Your Honor, the court's decision as to population numbers is moot. The parties agree that the census controls.
Let me ask two more questions, if I might. One, you're not making any allegation that there's the lack of good faith by the mayor. True.
Well, I don't think we've ever said anything like that. I can't imagine.
I just wanted to make sure.
No, I'm not making a bad faith allegation here, but I don't think bad faith is the right measure of whether the compliance with charter has occurred.
I understand that. And number two, what language in the charter at this point do you think is ambiguous? What is the specific language you think is ambiguous?
Well, I'm out of time, but if I can answer your question, Your Honor, is that okay?
Yes.
Go ahead. So we think it's unambiguously in our favor. We think that the duty that where it says the city council must fund a police force is unambiguous. They must fund the police force. And it has to be at a certain ratio based on employees per resident or based on the residents of the city of Minneapolis. We also think it's unambiguous because of the Gillis case and the inherent requirement that where you have funding minimums for a certain purpose, that the executive doesn't have the discretion to spend that money on something else. We think maintain also is unambiguous, but if the court decides there is ambiguity, that's why we've presented all of the statutory history, the text and structure of the charter and the public records that fully support our position. And so Your Honor, if there are no more questions, then I'll just ask the court affirm the district court and maintain the writ of mandamus.
Counsel, I have one last question for you, or maybe one last.
Fair enough.
I think you'd agree that mandamus is an extraordinary remedy.
Yes.
So I just want to understand under what circumstances you think it would be appropriate for a writ issue where the number of officers dips below the number that you say is the minimum that must be on the force at all time. You know, if it goes down to 720, would that, and petitioners can demonstrate some injury, would that warrant mandamus?
Your Honor, I think mandamus is appropriate any time that there is a violation of a clear legal duty, such as the number in the funding provision and the requirement that the mayor employ that number of officers. So I do think that it's appropriate at that point. But again, as we've seen in this case, the district court can issue an alternative writ and allow the city to show cause as to why it's not in compliance. And Your Honor, I'll just point out that the public record history from 1961 also shows this is why the city sought to hire more officers than the minimum, because of the normal vacancies and separations that occur in any government employment position. So
well, I think you would agree that the circumstances that the city has faced in the last year or so, are year and a half, are extraordinary. And no one could have planned for that. So given that, you know, are you, is your interpretation, does your interpretation of the charter result in the courts micromanaging the police department?
No, Your Honor.
The hiring of officers?
No, not at all, Your Honor. And in fact, we've said again and again that we never asked the district to control the city's discretion. We repeated in our brief, we're not asking for a control of discretion here. What we are asking for, what the district court did was they said that the charter does require this minimum. How the city attains that minimum, you know, whether it sees something coming, which the record will show that they saw the number of PTSD cases and separations rising when back in June and July of 2020. But to the extent that they see these things coming and make proactive decisions to make sure they're in compliance, that is what I think they should do. But that's up to their discretion as to what they do, as long as they comply with the minimums in the charter. And if there are no more questions, then. All right. Well, thank you, Your Honor. Again, I appreciate the time that the panel has given and the extra time as well. And we again ask the court to affirm the district court.
Thank you. Appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd first like to address the question of the show cause hearing coming up and why that is not appropriate for mandamus. As counsel stated, at the show cause hearing, the court could basically micromanage the city, including the CBA negotiations. The counsel mentioned that one of the pieces of evidence about whether or not the city was complying with the court's order could be how well or how the CBA negotiations end up. And that kind of micromanaging into discretionary choices by the mayor, by the city in general, on how it operates itself is fundamentally not appropriate for mandamus. I will be a little disjointed here, but I want to get around to some issues that were brought up in respondents' argument. The facts show that the city has met its obligations. The obligations to 7.C is that the city council funds, but it doesn't have authority to hire. Where that authority to hire goes is the mayor, and that is a fundamentally discretionary act. Now, the city would concede that the mayor cannot refuse to hire in bad faith, to answer Judge Connolly's question from earlier. But the mayor also has the discretion to hire and work in good faith in order to increase the number of officers. And as Justice Smith asked, there is no evidence in the record that the mayor and the administration has acted in bad faith in this. So this really comes down to how much the city council has funded. And in that case, it's stipulated and agreed that the city council provided actual funding for the requisite number of officers. That's part of the agreement that the part of facts that the parties entered before the district court reached its order. And working on that record, we know that the city council has met its obligation. Now, getting to the question about what is being done and what's happening, and the record ends in April because that's when it closed for the district court. And the court is aware that the city council passed a budget last week. That budget maximizes the amount of hiring that can happen. And hopefully, if it works and we have enough interested candidates, we will bring in 190 new officers over the course of 2022. But there's no guarantee that's going to happen, nor would I pretend that will. That would be 160 newly trained cadets and recruits, and 30 laterals. So the city is working in good faith in order to meet these numbers. And
if I understand your argument, you're acknowledging that the mayor has an obligation to have the force be at that minimum number, but the mayor has the discretion in hiring to get to that number, that that there isn't an exact time frame to get there. Is that your position?
We're acknowledging that the mayor has an obligation to work in good faith to meet the funding provided to him by the council. But we're also looking directly back at the charter, and the charter only requires a funding level. It doesn't require an on-street presence. And there is no obligation under the charter to provide an on-street number of officers at that number. That's just not how the charter is written today, Your Honor.
Except what about the employees' compensation? That's that help me out there. Why doesn't the term employees contemplate a specific number, contemplate that there be employees that are being compensated at that number?
Well, it goes down to the distinction between the council's responsibility and the mayor's responsibility. The number, this talks about the council, and the council has no authority whatsoever to hire, fire, and train new officers. And that paragraph, 7.3C, is directed directly at the city council and requires them to fund and provide for those employees' compensation. That is a direction for the city council to act and a limit on their authority. The hiring of the employees and staffing of those positions is the mayor's responsibility. And that employees' compensation language does not create that obligation of the mayor to meet that number immediately or even in a specific period of time. His obligation is to spend the money in good faith.
Is it an obligation to ever meet it?
No, Your Honor. His obligation is to spend the money in good faith. And if he reaches it, great. If he doesn't, the citizens of Minneapolis have an option in order to replace him. In this case, they chose him in the 2020 election or 2021 election because, and I won't speculate as to why the citizens were thinking one way or another.
Well, perhaps they chose him to hire 730 officers.
Your Honor, we're working on that right now.
But I mean, I guess my last point is, I'm with you, you know, I'm with that argument, you know, in terms of city council funds hire, the mayor hires and maintains. But at some point, it seems to me, he has to reach the number. And I'm not sure I agree with you, Mr. Saar, that, well, you know, as long as he's trying, you know, good enough for government. So what I don't understand is, what is the problem in affirming this grant of writ of mandamus? In 6 months, there'll be a hearing. You'll make the arguments that you're making, and presumably the district court would say, you know, close enough, you're getting there. I'll give you another 6 months. So what's the problem with that?
Your Honor, do I have an opportunity? I'm over my time. Can I answer this question?
Certainly.
That is the very issue why mandamus is not appropriate here, Your Honor. If you're finding an ambiguity in what the mayor's responsibility is, there is then no clear duty which can be enforced by the court in a mandamus action. There needs to be a clear duty here, and the clear duty is in funding, it is the city's responsibility or city's position that the clear duty of the mayor is to operate and maintain the police department. But to go and add the presently employed provision to the mayor's duty is not clearly stated, and not stated at all within 7.3A. And so therefore it is an inappropriate use of a mandamus to require the mayor to use his discretion to meet a duty that the court has to reach back to prior language that doesn't even exist in the current language. There, at that point, there's no clear duty.
Any further questions for counsel? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, and for that reason, the city appellants ask for judgment in his favor and overturning the order of the district court.
Thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments. The matter is submitted and we will issue our opinion within the statutory timeframe.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.